Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello, welcome to the Autism Detective. This is Patricia Lemmer, the author of Outsmarting Autism. Today I am thrilled to have as my guest Dr. Darren Engels. Hi, Darren.
Oh, hey, Patty, how are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So Dr. Engels is speaking to us from sunny Southern California, correct, or are you on the road?
I am in California, but not so sunny today. We get this thing called June gloom, so
it's oh, no.
Overcast. But hopefully,
well, we're lucky here in Pittsburgh. It is sunny, which doesn't happen that often. So many of you know Dr. Engels. He's well known in the autism community. He is a naturopathic physician and a fellow of the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, where I recently spent a good deal of time with him and his partner, Dr. Jessica Tran, and they were amazing hosts to me in this conference last fall where I didn't know a soul except them. And so I'm very grateful to Dr. Engels for showing me around and showing me the ropes of environmental medicine. So why don't we start with that? Dr. Engels, what is environmental medicine anyway, and what does a naturopathic doctor do in environmental medicine?
Sure. Well, you know, environmental medicine's really been around since the 1950s. Dr. Theron Randolph, who was a medical doctor in Chicago, is really the one that kind of coined this term, and originally they called it clinical ecology. And what's really
I remember that.
Yeah, if you go back and look at his early research, you know, he was one of the first doctors that was talking about dyes in foods being problematic for kids and chemicals in the environment potentially being toxins. And, of course, at the time, he was completely ostracized for his opinion.
Of course.
And he was an allergist by training. And he recognized that, you know, there were all these other things in the world that were affecting people's health that were really outside of the realm of, you know, things like mold and pollen and cat allergy and things of that nature. So, you know, he really paved the way for doctors like myself to explore this idea that, you know, we get exposed to so many things in our world that affect our health in a negative way. And, of course, I think you and I would both agree that as the time has gone on, certainly since the 1950s, you know, our world has become a more toxic place.
Right. So, and you've been practicing for over 30 years.
Well, I've been in healthcare for over 30 years. I've actually been practicing as a naturopathic doctor for about 25 years. I was a medical technologist before I was a doctor. I worked in clinical microbiology in a hospital in Chicago.
Wow.
So I spent my days, you know, looking under a microscope and doing all the lab tests that people get done. So it was a great background for doing what I do now.
Sure.
But you know, I think if we look at the microscope of autism, you know, although every child is uniquely different, I think the one red line that runs through most kids, at least that I see, is, well, really maybe two red lines. One is that there's an element of immune dysfunction. And I think the second one is that there's some element of toxicity and potentially the inability to clear these toxins readily. You know,
right.
These kids are the canary in the coal mine, and so when they get exposed to even smaller bits of different toxins, their reaction can be quite different than their neurotypic peers. So right. when we talk about heavy metals like lead and mercury or things like glyphosate that are in Roundup, which are now found, you know, throughout our food supply, you know, as these things accumulate in the body, you know, it affects the way the cells operate. It affects the way our immune system operates. And the
right.
net effect of that is that we've got, you know, basically a large population of very unhealthy children, and not even just on the spectrum. You know, even their neurotypic right. peers, you know, we're seeing this massive epidemic of obesity and autoimmune disease and allergies and asthma and eczema, and just really across the board, we've got, I think the latest statistic, it's something like almost 60% of all children living in the United States have a chronic disease.
Wow. My last I heard was 1 in 6, and you're now saying 1 in 2.
Almost, yeah. I mean,
wow.
It's frightening, and again, these numbers get worse every year. So, you know, as environmental medicine doctors, our goal is really to try and identify what are these things in your world or your child's world that are potentially stopping the body from doing what it's designed to do, and that's to heal. So if it's a neurological issue, a brain issue, if it's a gut issue or a skin issue, you know, it's built into our DNA to heal. We don't have to tell the body how to do that, but there are certainly obstacles to get in the way that interfere with that process from happening. So, you know, when you sit down with the naturopathic doctor, for those of you who don't know, naturopathic doctors, you know, we are similar in many ways to our medical doctor counterparts in terms of our ability to sit down with you, take a history, order lab tests or imaging, and come up with a proper diagnosis. I think where we really differ is when it comes to treatment philosophy. You know, we really focus on getting to the root cause of illness, really trying to understand what it is that underlies, you know, a person's illness. You know, allopathic medicine, for better or for worse, I think is great at heroic medicine. If you break your arm, you need life-saving surgery. This is where that type of medicine really excels. But I think when it comes to chronic illness, there tends to be an imbalanced disposition towards symptom management and
right.
not necessarily treating the underlying cause. And I think about a child with an ear infection as being a great example. You know,
right.
if you get a child that gets ear infections over and over, you know, you keep going to the pediatrician, you get a course of antibiotics, and then a month or two later, you're back with the same problem. Where we would sit down and say, well, why is this child getting ear infections? Do they have environmental allergies that's causing fluid accumulation in their ear, and that's why it gets infected? Or maybe they're eating something that's causing a problem. Maybe there's a structural issue that's impairing the flow through the eustachian tube. So,
or all,
you know,
of the above.
Yeah. So, you know, when you sit down with us, I mean, our first office visit's 2 hours. You know, you
wow.
sit down with most, you know, medical doctors, your first office visit might be 15 to 30 minutes. So
right.
when you've got a complicated history, you know, being able to really take the time and get to know the patient, get to know the family dynamics, really try and understand, you know, where things are coming from, what are they exposed to in their world, their home environment, their school environment, their church environment, what kind of foods are they eating, how is that affecting them? You know, all these little pieces really give us clues into what is really causing these underlying issues. So
I love this approach so much. Now, you had a personal health issue, didn't you, that you walked in these family's shoes and you had to take a look at your own health that declined. Do you want to tell us about that and how it got you involved in Lyme?
Well, yeah, I mean, after I went to naturopathic medical school in Seattle, and after I finished residency, I took a job out in Connecticut, and I was working with a classmate of mine, and that situation turned out to be not so great. So after about 15 months, I decided to open my own practice, and so I was going through all the process of, you know, trying to get financing and find a location, and finally got all that settled, and 2 weeks before I was set to open my own business, I got Lyme disease. I had a tick bites on the back of my leg. I had 105 fever and joint pain and headaches and neuropathy and everything you read in a medical textbook about Lyme disease. And I identified it fairly quickly, probably within a handful of days of the bite. I got treated right away, and within 4 days of being on doxycycline, I felt perfectly fine. And I thought that was the end of that. But, you know, for anyone who's ever started their own business, they know what it's like when you, you know, you can't afford employees and you're doing everything yourself. So I was working, you know, 6-7 days a week, 10-12 hour days, and 8 months into that schedule, I relapsed. And I started getting symptoms again. So I recognized, okay, you know, this is probably a relapse of Lyme, and started treating it, and it didn't get better. And I switched antibiotics for another month, and it didn't get better. And I went through almost 9 months of different oral antibiotic regimens, and actually just got worse. I think I lost 30 pounds in about 6 months just because my stomach was a wreck. I couldn't eat anything. I just felt terrible. And I was fortunate to have known of a Chinese medical doctor and acupuncturist in New York City named Dr. Zhang. And I went to see him, and it was, I think, kind of a combination of, hey, you know, you're not really taking care of yourself. And plus, he started treating me with Chinese herbs and acupuncture. And within a month, I felt 80% better. And it took another 2 years to really get that last 20% back of my strength and stamina and energy. But eventually got to a point where I was 100% symptom-free, and I felt great for quite a few years. And then sometime later, I started getting symptoms again and thought it was a relapse of Lyme because I was going through a lot of stress at the time. And the long and short of it is it wasn't Lyme. It was multiple sclerosis. So I've been living with multiple sclerosis for the last decade plus. And, you know, I learned from my own experience about what works, what doesn't work. So certainly being a Lyme patient gave me a very quick education on how to manage Lyme disease. And really I started applying what I did in my own life to my patients and found that, you know, the majority of them got better faster when we kind of followed those guidelines. So, yeah, there's nothing like a little personal experience to give you education on how to heal people.
Do many people with Lyme have the same experience you did where the antibiotics work and then they eventually regress? Does the Lyme bug stay dormant in your body if you don't do the give them a healing environment?
Well, I think, you know, it's the perfect storm, right? Like most infections, a lot of them are really opportunistic. So at least we know from the research that about 20% of people with Lyme disease are basically treatment resistant. And we know Dr. Monica Embers at Tulane has studied Lyme and found that there's a certain percentage of these organisms. So the Lyme organism is called Borrelia burgdorferi. At least that's the main one in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And up to 20% of these organisms are already resistant to antibiotics from the get-go. The minute you get bit and they start streaming through your bloodstream, they're already resistant to antibiotics. And
Wow. Kind
of the crazy thing with antibiotics is that Lyme is an incredibly slow-growing organism. If you consider most bacteria replicate every 10 to 20 minutes, Lyme replicates every 1 to 16 days. And the recommended treatment from the CDC is doxycycline, which actually isn't an antibiotic that kills organisms. All they do is it stops the organism from replicating. So it still depends on your immune system's ability to get rid of the organism. It just kind of holds it at bay. But, you know, if you're on 21 days of doxycycline, Lyme replicates every 1 to 16 days. You can imagine, you know, that may only cover one or two replication cycles, depending on, you know, how quickly things are moving. If you get tuberculosis, for example, TB is a very slow-growing organism as well. We'll give patients 3 heavy-duty antibiotics for 9 to 12 months, and it replicates every 15 to 20 hours. So why we're content to give Lyme less treatment than TB, you know, is kind of beyond me. I think where people really run into problems is, A, most people who get acute Lyme disease don't recognize it's acute Lyme disease, and therefore it goes on much longer than it should. Those who are fortunate to recognize it is Lyme and get early treatment, again, there's a good chance that the antibiotics will help get rid of the problem. I think, again, looking back on my own case, I think had I not been under so much stress, you know, those 3 weeks of antibiotics may have been enough. My immune system may have been healthy enough to help manage it on its own. But I think, you know, getting bit at a time I was already under a lot of stress, and then that just continued for the next 8 months. It was just not ideal with managing any kind of infection. And so, more often than not, what we...
Go on.
I say more often than not, what ends up happening is that people get to a point where they don't recognize it early. It's now months to even years after the fact, and now they've got this collection of sort of mysterious symptoms where they get headaches and joint pain and numbness and tingling and fatigue, and they go from doctor to doctor, specialist to specialist, and no one ever really bothers testing them for Lyme disease.
Right. You jumped exactly where I was going, because I was going to say that people are familiar with the bullseye and say, oh, I might have Lyme, and get tested.
Right.
But if there's no bullseye, or if it's even 6 months, a year, 2 years post-bullseye, and you're having these other nebulous symptoms, nobody's thinking, oh, could that be Lyme?
Well, the CDC says that 60 to 80% of people with Lyme disease get the bullseye rash. If you look at the actual research, it suggests it's about 40%, and those of us in clinical practice will argue it's probably less than 20%.
Wow.
But I look at myself, again, my rash was on the back of my left leg. Had somebody else not seen it, I never would have known I had it. You know, these ticks, when they bite you, like the warm, moist areas of your body, and these are often places we don't least easily see. So they like in your armpits and behind your knees and in your hairline. If you're not really looking at these places, even if that rash were present, you may not even be aware, again, unless someone else happens to spot it for you.
Easy to take these symptoms like joint pain and test for arthritis, or headache and say maybe you have a brain tumor, and fatigue and saying, you know, you're working too hard, you're under too much stress, and not testing.
Well, we call Lyme the great imitator, the great mimic. You know, there's over 100 symptoms associated with Lyme disease. And again, like I said, it looks like a lot of other issues. So people get tested for autoimmune disease like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis or MS. They get tested for other infectious diseases. They get tested for leukemia and lymphoma and cancer. And, again, they go through this often litany of tests.
Right.
Most of them come back normal. You know, unfortunately, with Lyme disease, a lot of blood tests really look pretty normal. And it's the more common scenario that people go through all these specialists and tests, and everything kind of comes back looking negative. I think the big red flag for me is when you get a combination of arthritic symptoms and neurological symptoms, there really are very few things that cause both.
Mm-hmm.
So when people have the joint pain and the neuropathy, the joint pain and the headaches, muscle aches and, you know, numbness, tingling, I mean, something like that, that can be a pretty good indicator that Lyme might be part of the picture.
What is your favorite lab test to do, other than your intuition that tells you that this is probably Lyme?
Well, ultimately, even according to the CDC, Lyme disease is a clinical diagnosis. It really is based on your signs and symptoms, and particularly if you live in an area like where you live, where Lyme is endemic. Some tests are better than others. Again, if you look at the research, the sensitivity of the standard test that Quest and LabCorp and all these big reference labs do, they do a two-tier test where they do a Lyme screen, and if that test is positive, then it flexes over to what's called a Western blot, which is a more specific antibody test. The sensitivity of that Lyme screen is less than 50%. It's about 43 to 46% sensitive.
Not good.
So it literally misses more than half the people with Lyme disease. And because it's an antibody test, you know, the further you get away from your exposure, your immunity wanes with time. So since they're measuring quantity of antibody, again, if you got bit a year ago or 2 years ago, the likelihood of picking it up now goes way, way down.
Yeah.
So there are other labs that do have more sensitive test kits. I typically use a lab called MDL. It's called Medical Diagnostic Labs. They're in Hamilton, New Jersey. And I like them because they do very comprehensive Lyme testing and other co-infections. So if you get bit by a tick that carries Lyme, we know in the Northeast that 30-plus% of ticks that carry Lyme also carry something else. So when you get that tick bite, you know, you might get Bartonella or Babesia or Anaplasma or Mycoplasma. And I swear every time I go to a Lyme conference and we learn there's like a dozen more things that these ticks can carry that can spread to you. So we're usually testing for a host of different things that clinically might all look very similar.
And it might not be a tick, too, right? It could, couldn't it be a mosquito or a fly?
Well, in terms of Lyme disease, there's very little evidence that other insects carry Lyme. However, other insects definitely can carry things like Bartonella. Bartonella you can get from fleas, you can get from lice. Other types of ticks that aren't deer ticks carry other infectious disease. But you know, for Lyme disease specifically, there's very little evidence that other biting insects, even other ticks, carry Lyme. But anyone who gets a tick bite, whether it's a deer tick or not, we still have to rule out, you know, Rickettsia and Bartonella and these other things because they can be spread just as easily.
And this MDL lab can test for all of those things?
Yep. They test for, you know, at least the majority of the infectious diseases we know are associated with deer tick bites. I like them because I think they do good testing. They also bill most people's insurance. There's another great lab called iGenX, based out of Palo Alto, California. They do great testing. The biggest downside is outside of Medicare, they don't bill insurance and they tend to be kind of expensive. But again, very reliable lab and a lot of Lyme doctors use them as well.
Darren, this has been so interesting. We need to take a break. And when we come back, I'd love to talk about how this led you to write a book about the Lyme solution. You're listening to The Autism Detective. My guest, Dr. Darren Engels, is an expert with he's seen thousands of patients with Lyme, and he'll tell us more. We'll be right back.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detective. Today we're learning about Lyme from Dr. Darren Engels, a naturopathic physician and an environmental medical doctor practicing in California. Dr. Engels, you also see people remotely, don't you?
Of course, yeah. I think the pandemic certainly led that we were all kind of working remote, weren't we? And so we were fortunate to be able to consult with people remotely, and we continue that today.
And how do people find you?
Easiest way is just to go to my website, which is just Darren Engels, ND, nancyd.com, and all of my practice information is there.
And Darren is D-A-R-I-N, and Ingles, I-N-G-E-L-S, plural, nd.com, right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about your book. The book called The Lyme Solution, a five-part plan that looks at practical, safe, cost-effective therapies that don't mask symptoms, that get actually to the root of the problem. Can you take us through this plan, please?
Sure. Well, again, you know, everyone with Lyme, like every child with autism, is a little uniquely different. And so, you know, I wanted to have a book that really gave people a roadmap to kind of understand the illness and how to navigate it. And, of course, everything always has to be fine-tuned to the individual. And when you write a book about anything, of course, you're trying to write something that hopefully will encompass the breadth of people that experience certainly Lyme disease. So, you know, the five parts really, I mean, part one is really about gut health. You know, the gut is really the cornerstone of good health. If you consider that up to 80% of your immune function stems from the gut, if your gut isn't functioning well, it's going to be very hard for the rest of your body and certainly your immune system to help manage infection. So the way that you digest your food, you absorb your food, if you're constipated, if you have diarrhea, if you have SIBO, you know, all these things, you know, really kind of dictate how the rest of your body is potentially going to function. So the gut and certainly the liver, which is part of your gastrointestinal tract, are really important. So, you know, one of the first things that we talk about is how well are you eliminating? Do you have any digestive issues? Is there any concern that maybe you're not assimilating the food that you do eat? Because I have some people that eat very healthy, clean diets, and if you're not absorbing the nutrients you eat, you know, the net effect is if you're relatively malnourished. So right. Really understanding your gut health. And again, there are labs out there that do great testing that we can look at your gut closely, see if there's an overgrowth of bacteria, yeast, or parasites. Are you digesting your food? Are you absorbing your food? Is there any evidence of inflammation? So I like to do stool testing on most of my patients just so we don't have to guess on what's going on. But that's really the first step before we get into other parts of Lyme treatment, is just ensuring that the gut is doing what we want to do.
And our listeners are pretty familiar with the gut. They've heard a lot of people talk about gut health and the importance of pooping and absorbing our food. So I'm glad that that's a part of your plan. And so what comes after that?
So the next step is really about diet. And, again, what you put in your mouth matters.
Right.
And it's more than just, you know, eating good food. I mean, obviously that's a big part of it, and I always encourage people to eat organic when possible. But I really promote what's called an alkaline diet. And, again, this isn't something I came up with. There are many, many books that have been written for decades on an alkaline diet. But if you look at cell physiology, we know that your cells function best in an alkaline state. And if you look at your body chemically, you know, your skin, your stomach, your bladder, and for women, the vaginal area is very acidic to help protect against outside invaders. The rest of your body is more or less alkaline. Even your blood is alkaline. And the point of an alkaline diet, by the way, isn't to change your blood pH. I hear this all the time. It's like, well, your blood pH doesn't change. I'm like, you're right. If your blood pH changes one way or the other, you're dead. So your body very tightly.
But your urine can change, right?
Urine can change. So we can use urine as a biomarker on kind of how you're doing with the diet. And the way I break it down is really into three categories. Again, it's not about the pH of the food. It's about how it breaks down in your body. So, for example, lemons. If I squeeze lemon juice on pH paper, it's very acidic. But when you drink lemon juice, it actually makes your body very alkaline. So it's really about how the food breaks down your body that influences that intracellular pH.
Wow.
So fortunately, most vegetables are alkaline-forming in the body, and there's some nuts and seeds and legumes. So category one are foods that people can eat as much as they want. They're all very alkaline-forming in the body. Category two are foods that people can eat, but I would probably limit the amount, only that these foods tend to be either slightly alkaline-forming, neutral, or slightly acidic. They're kind of in the middle. And that's all animal proteins, meat, fish, shellfish, eggs, and it's a lot of fruit. So again, mm-hmm. it's not that you can't eat them. It's just that if you look at your plate and divide it in quarters, it probably shouldn't fill up more than a quarter of your plate. And then category three are foods that are very acid-forming. These are foods I recommend people don't eat at all. And it's mostly junk food and processed food, dairy products, for people who are coffee drinkers, coffee. Again, all of these tend to be very acid-forming. But again, as you mentioned, you know, you can check urine pH very easily. Just go to your pharmacy, ask for some pH paper, and 30 to 60 minutes after eating, go pee on the strip. And we want your urine pH between 7.2 and 8. And if we can get you in that range, we have a pretty good idea that metabolically we're moving your diet in the right direction to encourage that alkaline pH.
Great. So that's what's step really, three?
So step three is really targeting the infection. And a lot of medical doctors will prefer to use antibiotics. I've treated over 8,000 Lyme patients, and I've probably written 10 prescriptions for antibiotics. I find herbs work really well. Of course, as a naturopathic doctor, herbs are part of our training, our wheelhouse. And I think the beauty of herbs is that the chemical constituents in herbs cover a lot of bases. So not only do they target the infection, but they're anti-inflammatory, and they promote better circulation, and they support your immune system. You can mix and match these different herbs to really fine-tune what each person's body needs. And some of the herbs, like, you know, for kids are tinctures. So, again, you can literally do drop doses to find, you know, the target dose for each child. I find in my kids with autism about 30% or so have Lyme disease, and again, because there's so much overlap in symptoms between what's autism, what's Lyme disease, I don't know that most parents or I could really tell you the difference, but mm-hmm. I treat kids with autism who have Lyme disease, and the toe walking goes away, and the stemming gets better, and mm-hmm. their language improves, and their gut issues get better. So sometimes I think things that we chalk of as just being autism, we may find that there really is this element of Lyme disease that's actually underlying that symptoms and actually wasn't related to autism at all. So
wow.
I think using herbs can be really beneficial and certainly very safe for children, very clinically effective. There's another Dr. Zhang, who's a researcher at Johns Hopkins, plant extracts for a couple of years, and we find that there's a handful of herbs that are clinically very effective against not just Lyme, but a lot of these co-infections. So part three is really about how do we best target these infections, whether it's Lyme and a co-infection, to help get rid of it.
Wow. Wow. We need to take another break. We've gotten through parts one through three, and when we come back, we can talk about four and five of your Lyme solution. You're listening to The Autism Detective with Dr. Darren Engels, a naturopathic physician with many years of experience treating thousands of patients with autism and Lyme. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
welcome back to the Autism Detective. My guest, Darren Engels, has been taking us through his five-part plan for working with long-term Lyme to make sure that it doesn't come back in a practical, safe, cost-effective way that rarely includes antibiotics. So we got through the gut, we got through using herbs to target the bugs, and diet to be organic and to make your body alkaline rather than acidic. Dr. Engels, take us to step four.
So step four is really about looking around the home, around your environment for hidden toxins. We know that this bioaccumulation of various toxins in our world undermine your immune system, undermine other organ functions like your kidneys, like your liver. So our ability to detoxify is very much tied into our ability to heal and feel well. So I think about the standard things that people use around their home to clean their home. A lot of these chemicals are horribly toxic, things like 409 and Mr. Clean and things of this nature.
Right.
People who use, you know, Glade plugins in their bathroom,
oh my God,
that scent is often, you know, formaldehyde and phenol,
right,
and toluene and all these other toxic chemicals. And, you know, I always say it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts, right? It's like that little insult over and over and over,
right,
accumulates. And because, again, kids on the spectrum are generally so sensitive, those little bits have such a profound effect.
And mold. Can you talk a little bit about mold? So many of our kids unknowingly have a moldy environment.
Mold toxicity, mycotoxicity can very specifically damage the brain, damage the nervous system. And so anyone who's had any kind of water damage in their home, and we know this is pervasive throughout schools, where there's a little bit of a leak and nobody ever takes care of it, and over time these molds can grow. And then those molds, in turn, secrete these chemicals called mycotoxins. Well, it so happens that these mycotoxins are fat-soluble, which means they go to the fatty parts of the body. Your brain and nervous system are very fatty tissues. So if there's that kind of exposure, it's very easy for the neurological system to be impaired. So, again, if you had a child on the spectrum that has that kind of mold exposure and started having these different symptoms, I don't know that you'd be able to distinguish whether it was an autism issue or whether it was some element of mycotoxicity. So often we're evaluating these kids for mycotoxins, for exposure. Very important to test your home. Even if you live in a brand new home, out here in California where I think construction's pretty poor, I have a lot of patients who live in homes that are 1 year, 2 years, 3 years old that actually have pretty extensive water damage from a leaky pipe behind the kitchen sink,
wow,
or in the bathroom. And most people have no idea. They don't see it. They don't smell it. And
yeah,
unless you have a professional come in and do the testing, you wouldn't necessarily know. But it's probably one of the biggest environmental factors that we're seeing right now that's impacting people's health because they don't know they have that exposure. So
right,
getting your toxin load under control is really important.
And what's part five?
And part five is really about lifestyle. And so this is sort of the combination of all the other things we do in our world that overburden us or maybe we don't do enough of. So sleep is really critically important. You know, when you get deep restorative sleep, that's when your body and your brain detoxify. That's when all that good tissue repair happens. So many people dealing with Lyme disease, and even a lot of kids with autism, they don't sleep very well.
Right.
So inability to get that good quality sleep really impairs the body's innate ability to heal. So
and
anything
we
can do to
go on.
Yeah. Anything we can do to facilitate better sleep, getting to sleep earlier, staying asleep. And again, we have a lot of natural things for people that need that help that we can use. There's a lot of great herbs like passion flower and lemon balm and kava kava and chamomile, and there's good homeopathics. Magnesium can be amazingly helpful in helping people get better sleep. Vitamin B12 for some people, glycine. So anything we can do to facilitate better sleep is important. I also think it's important that people move their bodies. You know,
yep,
your movement's very much tied into moving your lymphatics, and lymph is the way that our body detoxifies. you know, after the toxins come out of tissue, they go into your lymphatics. And unlike your blood vessels that have a heart that pumps it and that moves things through, your lymph doesn't have any pressure behind it. It requires on your movement to move the lymph. So
right.
as much as you can encourage, you know, particularly for kids, moving their body, doing some element of physical activity and exercise. And again, I know we have a culture of kids now that live behind an iPad and an iPhone, and
right.
they're not as physically active as I think certainly my generation was. But again, as much as we can encourage movement, and even if people have physical limitations, there's usually something you can do, even if it requires the help of a physical therapist or occupational therapist to assist in getting that movement, but that is really important. And lastly, it's really just about stress management. I think, you know, certainly during the pandemic years, we were all stressed, and I think we're still reeling from the effects of that. So for kids mm-hmm. not being in school, not being around their friends, kids not seeing their therapist, and having their whole routine disrupted was incredibly stressful. And so the way that we manage it and the way we help kids manage it, again, can be really important. So whether it's working with a counselor or a therapist, finding activities that help people de-stress, it's going to be a little bit different for everyone, but your ability, and certainly as a parent, your ability to help manage your child's stress, all of that, again, is critically important.
Well, you really covered the waterfront in this Lyme solution. And one of my more recent interviews was with a dentist who talked about the importance of jaw structure and development and what was going on in the mouth and breathing and sleep apnea in many of our kids. And you're right, and these kids are not sleeping, and nobody has addressed the reason. And they look at the sociological aspects of it, you know, the parents' handling of it, or what we can do in the environment. But, you know, darken the room and get the electronics out of the room, but that we've got to look at the breathing patterns and the sleep apnea and the
right.
bite. And I encourage people to listen to that interview with Dr. Meghna Dasani. So the people who you see, you mentioned earlier, many of them, and now you're saying almost 50% of our kids have allergies, asthma, some kind of chronic illness, and one in two, you say, oh my God, 50% of these kids have a diagnosis, which is resulting in behavioral abnormalities, learning disabilities, all kinds of autistic kind of symptoms. And I know you see them and treat that aspect of it too. And perhaps you can begin to get into that, and then we'll do more of that in the last segment.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is sort of this, what we call mast cell activation syndrome, or MCAS, in that these mast cells are the kind of cells that trigger certainly specific kinds of allergies. Our friend Dr. Theorides, who's an MD, PhD allergist, research on kids with autism and found that they have a lot of mast cells in and around their brain. So when
wow.
they get activated by an allergen, by a pathogen, by a toxin, they can have all sorts of neurological symptoms, even if they never get typical hay fever. So when we talk about mood and behavior and cognition and language and sleep, all of that can be incredibly disrupted when there's this mast cell activation in and around the brain.
Wow.
So in addition to all the neurological
hold that
symptoms,
thought. It's time to take our last break. And when we come back, I want you to talk about how we can know that that's what's going on and how you do some of this desensitization that can make them less susceptible to all of these environmental insults. You're listening to The Autism Detective with Dr. Darren Engels, a naturopathic physician. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
You know, when my
my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detective, Dr. Darren Engels, an expert in Lyme and mast cell activation syndrome. He is also a MAPS doctor, and Dr. Engels, MAPS is the newest version of what started out as Defeat Autism Now Doctors. MAPS is training doctors all over the country, and our listeners might be familiar with a MAPS doctor. You're one. Where do they find that? I forget what the website is.
That's a great question.
All right. Well, they can look it up. MAPS. It's medical. What does it stand for?
It's the Medical Academy of Pediatric Special Needs.
Okay. Now, let's go into how would you identify somebody who has some of these immune system dysfunctions, mast cell activation syndrome, and more importantly, how do you treat it with some kind of desensitization?
Well, as an MCAS is really a clinical diagnosis, there are a handful of blood and urine tests that might help identify if someone's experiencing it. More often than not, these tests come back negative, so it really is, again, based on the clinical symptoms. There are medications, there are natural supplements that are called mast cell inhibitors. They basically help stabilize these mast cells because mast cells contain over 200 chemicals, histamine being the main one, but these other chemicals that cause allergy symptoms. So you can imagine if we can keep the mast cell from basically popping like a balloon and releasing all these chemicals, we stop a lot of these symptoms. There are those, but ultimately that doesn't fix the problem. We really want to fix the problem doing some element of immunotherapy or immune therapy where we can retrain the immune system to become more tolerant to these various triggers. And so if you think about allergy as a whole, it really is an overreaction of your immune system to something that's often a normal part of your world. So in our practice, we do really two main types of immune therapy. One's called sublingual immunotherapy. Sublingual means under the tongue. And we do testing to find out very specifically what kind of allergy somebody has. Are you allergic to cat or dog or pollen or mold or certain foods? And then from that, we make up in our office, these various antigens of cat, of dog. So it's very similar to people who get allergy shots. It's just we don't inject it. There's over 1,000 studies on sublingual immunotherapy. It's been used for over 100 years. It's widely used throughout Europe, and there's a lot of studies in children. So very safe, very effective, and it's very specific to the individual. So, again, we're only giving the person what they're sensitive to. But over the course of treatment, we start increasing the dose as their tolerance improves. And ultimately, the goal is to get to a point where, you stop reacting to these substances.
And is this permanent? You can do it so they will never react again, or they might regress again if they're exposed, overly exposed?
Yeah, the goal is to get to a point where you stop reacting completely.
Okay.
And, now, granted, it can take several years to get to that point. The earlier we start, the better. I mean, having a child come in at 6 years old is better than someone coming in at 60. Your immune system's a bit more adaptable when you're younger, but ultimately the goal is to get to a point where you don't need to do immunotherapy drops anymore. Then they'll tell you the same thing with allergy shots. They'll tell you it's 7 to 9 years of doing allergy shots. I find it's a little bit less with sublingual immunotherapy. But again, the goal is to get to a point where you don't need to rely on this at all.
All right. And what's
and
the
second?
And
then we have what's called LDA or low-dose allergy therapy. So LDA is actually developed by a pharmacy, and they make extracts. There's a different food mix that has about 70 different foods. There's an inhalant mix that has mold and pollen and cat and dust and dog and feather and pretty much anything you breathe in. And then there's a chemical mix for people who are chemically sensitive. So if you know that perfume bothers you and strongly scented odors and things of that nature. So with LDA, there's really no testing involved. It's based on your clinical history. If we think you're sensitive to foods or mold, we just give the dose. And the idea behind that is that, let's say there's, you know, 10 foods you're sensitive to, Well, those 10 foods are in the mix, and the other 60, who cares, because you're not sensitive. Same thing with the inhalants. You know, they cover the base of what you found pretty much throughout the world with different pollens, different molds, and so forth. And, you know, we may not be successful at treating 100% of your allergies and sensitivities, but if we get most of them, as your immune tolerance gets better, your reactivity to the other ones is naturally going to go down. So we don't always have to control everything in your world that bothers you, but if we can get most of it, we can definitely help improve your overall tolerance to all these various triggers. So between sublingual immunotherapy and low-dose allergy therapy, the end game is the same, is that we're just trying to improve your immune tolerance. LDA is a lot more dilute than sublingual immunotherapy, so it's really great for super sensitive individuals, even for people who have really, you know, more significant allergic responses. LDA is a little bit safer just because it's more dilute, but I like the fact that we have options for families to find out what works best. And between the two, really the big difference, I'll say, is time. Sublingual immunotherapy generally works a lot faster. With LDA, you only get a dose every 7 weeks. With sublingual immunotherapy, people get their doses daily. Mm. So I find just clinically people tend to respond a little bit faster.
Right. So as we're winding up here and summer has started and the ticks are rampant and there's pollen everywhere and we're going outside more where there's all kinds of toxins, can you give a couple of prevention ideas and how to stay healthy?
Well, I think in terms of tick prevention, you know, one of the things that's shown in the research is that if you spray your shoes and socks with a chemical called permethrin, permethrin is very toxic when it's wet, but when you do it, you have to get gloves and a mask and protect yourself. But when you have shoes and socks that are, once it's dry, it's actually very, very safe. But if you use that on your shoes and socks, and then you, when you're wearing them outside, it reduces the risk of a tick bite by over 70%.
I mean, and where do you get it?
You can buy it at probably Home Depot, Lowe's, any home supply store. They tend to sell it. And, again, you just have to be very careful with applying it. So you go out on a nice sunny day, whatever shoes and socks you're going to dedicate to being your outdoor socks and shoes, then spray them, let them dry, and then just use those when you think you might be in areas where there are ticks. But, again, you know, most ticks come through your feet. And if you can help protect yourself that way, that's really one of the best things that we've learned. There are some great essential oil products. There's one I like called TikTok Naturals. Again, you can spray on yourself. Very safe if it touches your skin. Just be careful of your mucous membranes. Safe on children, safe on pets. But you can also use that as a way to help prevent getting a tick bite.
And so this, say the word again, permethrin?
Permethrin, yeah. P-E-R-M-E-T-H-R-I-N.
And is it something you can spray on your shoes?
Yeah.
Or wipe it on? How does it come?
Yeah, it typically comes as a spray. And you just, you know, lay out your shoes and socks on a patio or wherever it's going to be. Again, make sure you wear a mask, wear gloves, protect your eyes. and then just spray the shoes and socks. And then after it dries again, it's very, very safe to touch.
Wow. Darren, this has been amazing. Thank you so, so much. Dr. Darren Engels, his website is his name, DarinEngels, like Nancy, D like dog, .com. And his book is called The Lyme Solution, The Five-Part Plan, which he described, and his allergy elimination techniques are well known, and there are other MAPS doctors that do those too, but that's really the best way to deal with some of these issues that our kids are having. I can't thank you enough, Darren. Last word. You get the last word.
Well, I say if you have a child on the spectrum, which you're tuning in, I'm assuming you do, you know, it's definitely worth testing your child for Lyme. Again, the symptoms overlap so much, and my clinical experience is that there is a large percent of these kids that are struggling with Lyme. And although I've never seen a child with Lyme get cured from autism by just doing Lyme treatment, we see an indefinite improvement in quality of life. A lot of these symptoms get better, so definitely worth investigating.
Thank you so much. Good luck to you, and I hope to see you again this coming fall.
All right. Thanks, Patty.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to Bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.